Today we come to the midpoint of Exodus, working our way through what are the first five books of the Bible, what we often call the Pentateuch, what in Judaism is called the Torah, what I am calling the Jesus backstory. Jesus himself speaks of the Torah in Matthew 5 and 17. Do not think I have come to abolish, he says, the Torah or the Nevi'im. Do not think I have come to abolish the law or the prophets, he says. Not at all. I did not come to abolish, but I came to fulfill. Jesus is the fulfillment of the whole of the Torah, and so it is with that we are working our way through the Torah, parsha by parsha. The Torah being divided into 54 parshiot, and so with that, again, today we come to Exodus. Noting that Exodus comes from the Greek ek and hodos. Hodos means roadway or path. Ek means from out of, and so literally it can be translated the way out, the path out, the road out. Keeping in mind also that in Hebrew it's not called, or in Judaism it's not called Exodus, it's actually called Shemot, Sefer Shemot, translated the Book of Names. And so with that, today we come to, in Sefer Shemot, we come to Parsha Mishpatim. Parsha Mishpatim travels from Exodus 21, from Shemot 21, all the way through 24. Beginning at 21 and 1, Ve'ele HaMishpatim. These are, and in our translation, in the NIV, it translates that as the laws, HaMishpatim, the laws. In other translations, we might read rules, regulations, decrees, ordinances. Ve'ele HaMishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem. These are the laws you are, it says, to set before them. These are the laws you are to set before them. And with that, we are kind of off and running. We are running straight into verse after verse after verse after verse after verse after verse after verse. Hear the echo. All sorts of laws, rules, and regulations. In fact, we get 53 of them right here in Parsha Mishpatim, all the way from the buying of a Hebrew slave, all the way to not cooking a goat in its mother's milk. Keep that in mind. Noting this follows on the footsteps, the heels of the recent exodus out of Egypt. The Israelites are now out of Egypt. They are camping at the base of Mount Sinai. There's been fire and smoke, and God has given to Moses the Ten Commandments. And then straight off, we jump into Mishpatim, which again is verse after verse after verse of law after law after law, several chapters worth, which on one hand can seem a bit cumbersome. It can kind of seem a bit heavy. There's all sorts of stuff in here, criminal law and damages and torts. And yet, what we want to get at is that flowing just underneath the surface, flowing in and around and all through Parsha Mishpatim, in a way similar to last week, Parsha Yitro, in a way similar, Parsha Mishpatim travels this way of peace. It continues that theme of peace, and we can think of last week, all for the sake of peace, Midrash Tanhuma, all that is written in the Torah, it's written for the sake of peace. What again is shalom? Shalom, often translated as peace. And then even here today in Mishpatim, we read again of this idea of peace. In fact, some 14 times we read of shalom, but not shalom. It's actually shalem. 14 times we read the word shalem here. Shalem also carries that idea of peace. It also has the idea of to be made whole. It also has a sense of oneness, of unity, of connectedness, of connection. And so with that, it's this idea of maybe we could say coming together. Another way to put it would be to say it's a way of making things right. Shalem is this idea of making things right. In a word, we would say justice. Noting peace and justice, we could say shalom and shalem are really two sides of the same coin. In fact, it's interesting, Martin Luther King Jr., outside of a California prison in 1967, he made this statement. In part, he says, there can be no justice without peace, and there can be no peace without justice. Now, I don't know if he knew anything about Parsha Mishpatim, there can be no justice without peace, and there can be no peace without justice. Point being, they are intimately connected together. And we see this here today in our Parsha, kind of the twins of justice and peace. And again, there are 14 of them. We're not going to read all of them, but Exodus 21 and 33 says, if anyone uncovers a pit or digs one and fails to cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls into it, the one who opened the pit must pay, that's shalem, must pay the owner for the loss, take the dead animal in exchange. In other words, it's to make things right, right? It's justice. Today we might think of it as restorative justice. Shalem is making things right. Exodus 22 and 3, we read, anyone who steals must certainly, it says, make restitution. What is shalem yeshalem here in Hebrew? But if they have nothing, they must be sold to pay for their theft. One more, verse 14, if anyone borrows an animal from their neighbor and it is injured or dies while the owner is not present, they must make restitution. Shalem yeshalem, again in the Hebrew. This idea of to make things right. We can think justice, all for the sake of peace. And so on the one hand, this is nothing but law after law after law after law. It's criminal law. It's damages. It's torts. It's cumbersome. It's heavy. But on the other hand, it is peace and it is justice. And it is making things right, which is not only the heart of this Parsha, but really flows through the whole of the Torah and even down to the prophets. And so I want to head over to Isaiah for just a moment. In the opening chapter, in verse 2, we read, hear me, you heavens, listen, earth, for Yahweh has spoken. I reared children and brought them up. But they have, it says, rebel. That's from the Hebrew pashah. It means to turn away from. And so they've pashahed against me. They've turned away from me. And then verse 3, and what is a rather, I think, cutting statement. It's really interesting here. We read, the ox knows. That know is from yada, which is interesting because that's a word of relationship. That's a word of closeness and connection, even this idea of bound together, even intimacy. And it says, the ox yadahs the master, the donkey the owner's manger, but Israel does not yadah. Israel does not yadah. My people do not understand. Let's drop down to verse 11. We kind of get the reason why. He says, the multitude of your sacrifices, what are they to me, says Yahweh? I have more than enough of burnt offerings, of rams, and the fat of fattened animals. I have no pleasure in the blood of bulls and lambs and goats. Verse 12, when you come to appear before me, who has asked this of you, this trampling of my courts? Stop bringing meaningless offerings. Your incense is detestable to me. New moons, Sabbaths, and convocations, I cannot bear your worthless assemblies. Your new moon feasts, your appointed festivals, I hate with all my being. They have become a burden to me. I am weary of bearing them. When you spread out your hands in prayer, I hide my eyes from you. Even when you offer many prayers, I am not listening. Your hands are full of blood. Wash and make yourselves clean. Take your evil deeds out of my sight. Stop doing wrong. Welcome to Sunday morning. Now, the sacrifices and offerings and all of that, in and of themselves, are not bad or not wrong. In fact, it's God Himself who has established, Yahweh has established all of this. Kind of as a way, or as a means of addressing things like idolatry and seeking forgiveness. By way of example, here's one. The purpose of the peace offering, this is from the author Jeremiah Garrett, the purpose of the peace offering was to consecrate a meal between two or more parties before God and share that meal together in fellowship of peace and a commitment, and we can think justice here, to each other's future prosperity. So the point being here, sacrifices and offerings, the feasts and the festivals, we could say the church gatherings. These are good things, and yet all of that kind of religious ritual and church activity is really meaningless. It's hollow, it's empty, apart from the deeper reality. What God says, right? God says, in effect, enough already. Stop it, right? The multitude of your sacrifices, what are they to me? In fact, he says, they're nothing, right? Apart from, verse 17, learn to do right. The sacrifices, the offerings, feasts, festivals, church gatherings, all of it is hollow, is empty, is meaningless, apart from the deeper reality, right? Which is learning to do right. God says, enough, learn to do right. And then it says, seek justice. Now, what's interesting about seek justice here, and this ought to like explode your mind just a little bit, although not too much. We don't want to have to clean that up today. But the word justice here comes from the Hebrew mishpat. It comes from the Hebrew word mishpat. Translated laws, mishpatim, in our verse this morning. Right, mishpatim is the plural of mishpat. And just what does mishpat look like? Well, he says, defend the oppressed. He says, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. What is a care and a compassion for the vulnerable, for the poor, the mistreated, the one who has been, we could say, pushed to the margins? And not only is it Isaiah saying this, but we can go to Micah 3 and 9. In a way very similar to Isaiah, we read, hear this, you leaders of Jacob, you rulers of Israel who despise, and it says who despise justice, who despise mishpat, and distort all that is right, which is what mishpat looks like, it's right, it's peace and it's justice, and distort all that is right, and then dropping down to 6 and 8, which I think is familiar to any of us, we read, he has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does Yahweh require of you? And then it's here, in contrast to the leaders that we just read, here we read, to act justly. What is again from the Hebrew mishpat? What is again peace and justice? What is the making of things right? In fact, we find mishpat over 400 times all through the Torah, all through the Tanakh, what we think of as the Old Testament. It's in virtually every Old Testament writing. And not only that, but it flows all the way down to in and through the life of Jesus. Not so much in word, but in his activity. Matthew chapter 8 and verse 1. When Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. John 11 and 33. When Jesus saw her, meaning Mary, it's referring to Mary here, when Jesus saw her, Mary weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? Jesus asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Mark 9:36, he took a little child whom he had placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me. And then he adds to that, not just me, but the one who sent me. Welcome comes from the Greek dekomai. It means to receive into your presence. It would be welcoming someone as you would welcome a guest. What is in fact an offering of peace? What is an act of justice? John 8 and verse 3, the teachers of the law, the Pharisees, brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now what do you say?" We read Jesus, he bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. When they kept questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. Now, since we're talking about law today, I'm going to do a quick sidebar, noting there has been a bit of commentary exploring just what it is that Jesus was writing when it says he was writing on the ground with his finger. There's been all sorts of commentary. Keeping in mind here, these were teachers of the law. These were Pharisees. These were men who knew their Bible, knew their Hebrew Bible, knew their Tanakh, knew the Torah. They certainly knew the prophets. And they would have known Jeremiah, and they would have known Jeremiah 17 and 13. It's there we read, "Those who turn away from you will be written in the dust, for they have forsaken the Lord, the fountain of living water." Those who turn away from you will be written in the dust. Now, what's also interesting with this, because when we look at translation here, Jesus, it says, writing on the ground. Here it says, will be written in the dust. In the Greek, that's the word, Greek word ge, is used for and translated ground. In the Hebrew, aretz is the Hebrew for what is translated here as dust. Aretz would be better translated earth or ground. And in fact, ge is the Greek translation of the Hebrew aretz. Sometimes I wish translations would take those things into account, because it's not that we can't figure it out, but sometimes in English we use different words when really I think it would be nice if they used the same word in both places so that you could make that connection maybe a little more cleanly in the English. But nonetheless, it's the same language. Point being, the most consistent understanding we have is that Jesus was inscribing not the name of the woman into the dust, into the ground, into the earth, but it was the name of the Pharisees and or the teachers of the law. Right? Those who turn away from you will be written in the earth, the ground, the dust. All of which I think brings us back then to Parsha Mishpatim. On one level is all about the law, right? Law after law after law after law, and yet even more, underneath the surface, in and all around, it is defend the oppressed, right? It is take up the cause of the fatherless, right? It is plead the case of the widow. It is care and it is compassion for the vulnerable, for the poor, for the mistreated, for the one who is in the margins. It is shalom and it is shalem. It is peace and justice. It is making things right. Is that the attitude and activity of your life and mine? Does my life reveal the attitude and activity, we could say, of shalem? We could ask, does my life slant toward justice for all? Does my posture bend toward making things right? Then we can dive in a little deeper and ask, do I seek to make restitution with those that I have harmed? Do I invest in those who are the vulnerable in society? Do I demonstrate care and compassion for the poor? We could ask, do I stand with the one who is mistreated? And then to kind of borrow from the language from the Gospels, the stories of Jesus, we could ask, how is God inviting me to reach out my hand to another? Who is God inviting me to come alongside in their ache? Who is God asking me to welcome as a guest? And then with whom is God calling me to stand? Ve'ele ha'mishpatim asher tasim lifnehem. These are the laws. This is the justice you are to set before them.